Good evening. Trump unleashed, accuses his enemies of being communists, threatens a continuation if he loses next month. As Governor Cuomo says, he doesn't trust the COVID vaccine that's coming down from the federal government. And in New York, a judge says no to a high-rise jail in Chinatown. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the WBAI News for Thursday, September 24th, 2020. President Trump was booed Thursday at the Supreme Court building in Washington. He came to pay respects to late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The crowd was chanting, "Vote him out." He plans to nominate a replacement this weekend for the liberal justice. At his motorcade return to the White House, there were also chants of Breonna Taylor from some spectators standing on the sidewalk. Trump acknowledged hearing the chant, but dismissed it as not very strong. He told reporters, "We could hardly hear it from where we were." Meanwhile, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced today a New York State task force will review any COVID-19 vaccine Trump's administration authorizes. He says he doesn't trust the federal government.
So the first question is, the vaccine safe? Frankly, I'm not going to trust the federal government's opinion. And I wouldn't recommend to New Yorkers based on the federal government's opinion. Second question is, if it is a safe vaccine, how do you implement it? Implementation is a massive undertaking. On the first question of, is it safe? New York State will have its own review when the federal government is finished with their review and says it's safe. We're going to put together our own review committee headed by the Department of Health that will advise me. We have the best hospitals and research facilities on the globe in this state. We're going to put together a group for them to review the vaccine so I can look at the camera and I can say to New Yorkers that it's safe to take. I want to make sure we know it's safe to take. I'm appointing a committee today that is going to come up with a vaccine distribution and implementation plan on how we will do it.
And that's Governor Cuomo. On Thursday, the governor reported two COVID-19 deaths in New York State. The state's infection rate also ticked up above 1% for the second time this month. Of the 92,953 COVID-19 test results that came back on Wednesday, 955, or 1.02%, were positive. As of Wednesday, 500 people in the state were hospitalized with COVID-19. In New York City, officials are on alert as six neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Queens are experiencing a significant spike in COVID-19 cases. The upticks came in Williamsburg, Kew Gardens, Edgemere Far Rockaway, and sections of Midwood, Borough Park, and Bensonhurst. The city is lumping the biggest surge together into one group called the Ocean Parkway Cluster. Mayor Bill de Blasio said that his team is watching the situation carefully, but wasn't ready to sound the alarm. Meanwhile, on the second day of a gradual school opening, another 14 school buildings throughout the five boroughs were found to have a confirmed COVID case reported, with close contacts ordered to quarantine. The Department of Education said that out of nearly 19,400 teachers tested, 65 have been positive, yielding an infection rate of 0.34%. President Trump regained his power to shock on Wednesday when he announced that losing the presidential election may well be evidence of fraud in itself and justify continuing in office. He also declined to promise a peaceful transition.
Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transfer of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
People are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We want to have get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
And Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders accused Trump of becoming a tyrant.
When asked by a reporter in the White House briefing room, quote, "There won't be a transfer, frankly. There will be a continuation," end of quote, from Donald Trump. That is not his choice. That's for the American people to determine. Let us be very clear. There is nothing in our Constitution or in our laws that gives Donald Trump the privilege of deciding whether or not he will step aside if he loses. In the United States, the president does not determine who can or cannot vote and what ballots will be counted. That may be what his friend Putin does in Russia. It may be what is done in other authoritarian countries, but it is not, and it will not be done in America. This is a democracy.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. But White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany doubled down. She said the president will be as peaceful as she says the Democrats are.
If he loses this election, can you assure us that there will be a peaceful transfer of power?
The president will accept the results of a free and fair election. But I think that your question is more fitting to be asked of Democrats who have already been on the record saying they won't accept the results of an election.
Are the results legitimate only if the president wins?
The president will accept the results of a free and fair election. He will accept the will of the American people.
But President Trump continued his tirade, bringing in a new epithet as he invoked an ancient curse, the C word.
Veterans here today bear witness to how socialism, radical mobs, and violent communists ruin a nation. Now the Democrat Party is unleashing socialism right within our own beautiful country. Today we proclaim that America will never be a socialist or communist country. And I'm going to add that word, or communist. The first time I've ever said that. I've never added the other word, but I think it's appropriate, Mike, when you look at the kind of ideology we're also facing, when you see the rioters, looters, anarchists, and then you see the press, the media, play right into their hands. It's so sad to see the media, the way they're being used. The media is being used like fools. They're being used, and it's very sad to watch, but we will prevail. It's the first time I've said that, though. Socialism and communism. We did not fight tyranny abroad only to let Marxists destroy our beloved country. Together, we will defend our freedom and our American way of life, and we will defend it strongly and successfully, as we've been doing.
And that was President Trump speaking earlier at a memorial or as a commemoration for Bay of Pigs veterans. The Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961 was carried out by Cuban exiles attempting to invade Cuba. They were defeated. Over 1,000 were taken as prisoners. Meanwhile, angry demonstrators from Louisville to New York continued protesting the state of Kentucky's decision to indict only one of three cops and not for the actual killing in the shooting of Breonna Taylor during a botched police raid in her own home in March. The authorities in Louisville, Kentucky have charged Lorenzo Johnson, 26, with 14 counts of wanton endangerment and two counts of assault on a police officer after two officers were shot during protests in the city. The city erupted in angry demonstrations Wednesday. Neither of the officers who were shot during the protests in Louisville sustained life-threatening injuries. Mayor Greg Fisher.
And what we saw last night with the two police officers being shot is obviously completely unacceptable. Violence will only be a source of pain, not a cure for pain, and we know that violence is never the answer. Our community is hurting. Many see Breonna Taylor's case as both the tragic death of a young woman and the continuation of a long pattern of devaluation and violence that black women and men face in our country as they have historically. Well, the question obviously is, what do we do with this pain? There is no one answer, no easy answer to that question, but I do know this, violence is not the answer and destruction is not the answer. So I'm asking everyone to reject violence and join me in committing ourselves to the work of reform for justice and for equity, and do that now. We have to respond to what Dr. King called the fierce urgency of now, because this problem has always been, but it's acutely even more so urgent today.
And that's Mayor Greg Fisher of Louisville. In New York City, hundreds of people gathered outside Barclays Center in downtown Brooklyn to express their fury with the decision. crowd later marched in the streets of downtown Brooklyn and onto the Manhattan Bridge. Protesters said they wanted to show solidarity with Taylor and with the movement. In Manhattan, several hundred protesters gathered outside Trump Tower before marching downtown. They held signs with messages that included "Breonna was essential," referencing Taylor's job as an ER technician. "Her life mattered," and "No justice, no peace." And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson on Thursday ended his 2021 bid for mayor just months after a bruising budget battle that put him on the outs with many of the city's progressive forces. Johnson, who represents Chelsea, the West Village, and parts of Midtown, was regarded as a leading contender before COVID-19 hit the city. Johnson wrote, This challenging time has led me to rethink how I can best be of service to the city, and I have come to the conclusion that this is not the right path for me. In his statement, Johnson added that he's been dealing with depression over the last few months. The executive editor of the Gotham Gazette is Ben Max, who co-hosts Max and Murphy Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on WBAI.
What does that mean for the race this year, next year?
Everything changed, obviously, for everyone in New York, but including those who were thinking about running for any office in next year's election, especially the highest office in the city. Everything changed with the coronavirus crisis, its many aspects of its fallout. And then Corey Johnson was right in the middle of not only having to react to that and deal with that and how it changed everything, but also he was starting to get going in his mayoral campaign. He completely paused fundraising during the pandemic. Very understandable, makes a lot of sense. But then he was also had to negotiate a new city budget with the mayor. That was a very arduous process for multiple reasons, not the least of which is that a new round of Black Lives Matter protests erupted. The defund the NYPD movement really got going. And he was right at the center of that. People targeted the mayor and the city council speaker with what they wanted to see in the budget. And a lot of activists were very disappointed with Johnson as he was reevaluating things. He's also been struggling with depression, which he said openly, and that seems to have influenced his decision to step out of this race before officially declaring his entrance.
I don't see how it's possible to be a leader in New York without being tied to the real estate interests. But you have a growing number of people tilting at windmills that somehow they can run and not take any money from any landlords at all.
And the ground has really shifted on both issues related to policing and issues related to real estate. Just some of the most important issues and hot button issues, you know, you've really seen this rise from the left of putting a lot of pressure on Democrats. And some of the norms have changed in the Democratic Party, or at least the party is having an intra-party battle about a lot of this stuff. And on one side, you have sort of the Andrew Cuomos of the Democratic Party. And then on the other side, you have this really fired up activist base that's basically saying, if you take money from real estate, you're in bed with them and you're toxic. And that wasn't fully the case for a long time. Although I remember in Corey Johnson's first run for city council in 2012, 2013, his ties to real estate were question then in the city council race. It's been an issue for him, but he disavowed real estate donations when he launched his fundraising. And we've definitely seen other candidates either take that same pledge, as you said, or there are some candidates like Eric Adams, for example, the Brooklyn Borough president, who's saying, you know what, I'm not eschewing any donations. And if anybody thinks that I can be bought, you're wrong, challenging people to prove him wrong in saying that.
What does that say about the upcoming mayor's race?
The two other sitting elected officials who are running are Scott Stringer, the comptroller, and Eric Adams, the Brooklyn Borough president. And they both seem now to have a lot of room to themselves in terms of the only elected officials running. And potentially, at this point, it looks like they might be the only two running who've ever run in elections before. Everyone else is a first-time candidate who's considering it or has jumped in. So that's pretty fascinating. The other people to watch are Maya Wiley, a civil rights attorney, former counsel to Mayor de Blasio. She's considering a run. Catherine Garcia, the former sanitation commissioner, just resigned from city government. She's considering a run. Sean Donovan is a former Bloomberg and Obama high-level official in their administrations, and he's considering a run. And then you have Diane Morales, a former nonprofit executive who's been declared as a candidate for a while, has raised a little bit of money and has been campaigning hard. And then Laurie Sutton, the former city Veterans Affairs commissioner. But there's other people who might jump in. There's other people who are considering it. So that's the sort of list of Democratic candidates at this point. But Cory Johnson's departure certainly seems to be a boost for Scott Stringer's campaign, which recently got off with some significant highlights in terms of the early endorsements that he rolled out.
And maybe Stringer, in a lot of ways, is representative of the type of person who usually runs for mayor of New York. But, you know, in this era where we have a president who never held office or ran an election before, could there be a surprise in New York?
Oh, I don't see why not. I mean, as you just said, I captured it quite well. He is exactly the type of politician who's worked his way up and is in a citywide position now and is, you know, a logical candidate to run for mayor. But could there be enthusiasm around other candidates? Absolutely. You know, someone like Diane Morales seems to be really tapping into, you know, energy among activists. Obviously, it's a, you know, a tough road to hoe for her. She's never run for office before, but she's out there working the campaign trail. And then, you know, Maya Wiley's gotten a lot of buzz. But again, Scott Stringer, he rolled out, he's another white mayor of New York City, but he rolled out a very diverse coalition of initial endorsements from elected officials who are younger, people of color. He absolutely shouldn't be dismissed at all.
And that is Ben Max, the executive editor of the Gotham Gazette and co-host of Max and Murphy, heard Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on WBAI. And Mayor Bill de Blasio's plan to close Rikers Island and replace it with four borough-based jails suffered a major setback this week following a judge's ruling that the city bypassed the legally mandated review process for its proposed Lower Manhattan jail. State Supreme Court Judge John Kelly issued the decision on Monday, siding with local Chinatown residents who filed a lawsuit against the jail's construction. A Lower East Side resident and visual artist, Siyoung Wang, says she wrote a letter to an organization in Chinatown, the Museum of Chinese in America, known as MoCA. In the letter, she says the museum alleged acceptance of a large grant from the city was a rejection of Lower East Side values and a quid pro quo to support the jail.
It was written to Nancy Yao Masbach, the president of MoCA, because I wanted to make clear that as an artist, I will not show my work at a cultural institution that does not understand structural and systemic racism. This is a history museum, and this is a history museum of a minority voice. Asian Americans, and specifically for this museum, Chinese Americans, have experienced systemic racism for years, right? Hundreds of years, since the 1800s, when the Chinese built the Transcontinental Railroad.
What is it that they're doing that stoked your ire in this case?
Since I had agreed to exhibit my work, which is, by the way, about the people who pick up cans and bottles for a living, and I focus specifically on the women that I see who are picking up cans and bottles in the Lower East Side, Lower Manhattan, and Chinatown. Many of them are people who are disposed of because garment factories left New York City. Many of these women ended up having to survive by picking up bottles. And what really got me to write this letter to Nancy Yao is because the museum claims that it was struggling financially. So when the jail plan was being proposed by de Blasio, the city council member, Margaret Chin, made it very clear that she is seeking community concessions and that she was going to support the jail plan. The community was outraged. There were town hall meetings. Many people were asking questions, but she continued to hold these meetings with de Blasio with handpicked nonprofits who would tell de Blasio what they would want as community gift backs. When it actually happened and it was actually stated in the points of agreement, the day after Margaret Chin and the city council voted for the borough-wide jail plan, in that points of agreement, very specifically, that MoCA would get $35 million, MoCA still denied that money had anything to do with jails. And that, to me, is so dishonest, is not being forthright with the community, and is actually profiting from a system that is hurting the community. I am against the jails in general. Seeing this jail, that this tallest and probably the highest jail in a city, in our neighborhood, not only is it going to have, and health studies have already came out about it, that it will have just enormous negative impact on the elderly, the people who live in the community. It also would decimate the small businesses. And even with that knowledge in mind, Mocha took the money and then denied that he had anything to do with the jails. As if community folks doesn't have brains. I don't understand why it would take that position, but it did. Mocha cannot take any money that's tied to the jail. Otherwise, it's despicable. It's just not honorable. It cannot be a museum that we can have respect for and support.
Communities are contributing to something that's good for the community, the reduction of the elimination of Rikers Island.
That's like a soundbite by de Blasio. If you actually look at the facts about how long it would take and the kind of money that we as taxpayers are going to have to invest in before this so-called smaller but extremely high-tech jail would be built, we're looking at about 15 years and about over $10 billion. I, as a mother and an artist, feel very deeply about how society should move forward so that we're not into a world of incarceration, but into a world of opportunities where people can actually live lives.
Siyoung Wang is a Lower East Side resident and visual artist. In a response, Nancy Yao Masbach, the president of the Museum of Chinese in America, denied there was any deal for the funds the museum may get from the city. And finally, more of WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange's medical history was shared with the court at the Old Bailey, London. Rebecca Miles has been following the hearing and files this report.
Dr. Nigel Blackwood, consultant forensic psychiatrist with the National Health Service and a consultant for Wandsworth Prison, was called by the prosecution and submitted a report on Assange's mental health. He'd seen him in April and diagnosed him as moderately depressed. Blackwood was cross-examined for the defense by Edward Fitzgerald. Blackwood said depression is common in the community and overrepresented in the prison population. There were lots of details about Assange's medical history and questions about attempts to end his life. He was exhaustively examined in court in repeated detail, and all the while with Mr. Assange sitting in court. The US government has argued Assange is not at a high risk of suicide should he be expedited to face trial. The judge asked reporters to respect the sensitivity of the medical reports. In the afternoon, a defense witness, Dr. Sandra Crosby, who's professor of medicine at Boston University and specializing in internal medicine, had said she visited Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in October 2017 and described symptoms of witnessing depression and PTSD in him. She works with victims of torture and sufferers of post-traumatic stress disorder, and she was severely disturbed over his deterioration. She visited him a second time and described more declining symptoms of sleep disturbances and low mood. When she visited him in February 2019, she saw that he'd deteriorated. When she visited him in Belmarsh Prison in October 2019, she said he appeared to be severely depressed and with a marked change in his appearance, couldn't remember names, and had an inability to write letters. During cross-examination, QC James Lewis, after she was fairly sympathetic to his cause, she said, no, that would not be fair to say. Lewis asked if she was aware that no one ever extradited from the UK to the US had ever committed suicide. She responded she was not an expert on extradition statistics. Two statements were read into court from the Internet Archive confirming the US government had made no effort to take down the WikiLeaks archive of unredacted State Department cables, and a statement from John Young of Cryptone, who says he has the full WikiLeaks unredacted US diplomatic cables on his website and has never been asked to remove them. The US Justice Department indictment charges Assange with publishing the unredacted cables and revealing the names of informants and agents in foreign countries, despite other people revealing passwords to the unredacted cables. Assange faces up to 175 years in prison if he's convicted of all charges. The indictment relates to his role in publishing the Iraq and Afghanistan war logs that revealed war crimes and other criminality by the US government around the world. Rebecca Miles, WBAI Pacifica Radio, New York.
Rebecca Miles has been following the U.S. extradition request hearing for Julian Assange, WikiLeaks publisher at the Old Bailey, London, now in its third week. And that's some of the news for Thursday, September 24th, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry and Rebecca Miles. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. From New York City, I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI News. Thanks for listening.